New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Hypothalamic Amenorrhea Podcast. I'm Dani Sharif, your host, certified fertility awareness practitioner, functional nutrition counselor, and founder of the HA Society, and of course, an HA recovery coach who has walked where you currently are walking. This is the place to come if you care about getting your period regularly. This podcast aims to educate, inform, and keep you motivated on your period and HA recovery track. So let's dive in. But last thing, nothing on the show should be taken as medical advice, so please seek the advice of your physician. So over a year ago, I created something called the 7-Day HA Recovery Commitment Challenge, and I've been running it for over a year. It was this free email-based challenge, so lots of reading, but you would get an email every day for 7 days to help you overcome and tackle the different but important areas that you need to be checking off in order to get your period back. Now, over time, I have collected some really great feedback, and upon working with all of these wonderful, amazing women, really started to learn even more about what works and what doesn't. And so I'm excited to be introducing to you guys the updated version. It's called the 7-Day HA Recovery Kickoff, and it is totally designed to help you not just commit to the process and have all of your ducks in a row in terms of important factors that need to be tackled and issues that need to be overcome in order to get your period, but the whole thing is now based in video, so you can listen/watch, and every day for 7 days we will tackle nutrition. There's actually 2 days of that because it's so big. We'll tackle lifestyle, we'll tackle exercise, your support network, your mindset game. Each video goes from anywhere between 12 minutes and 5 minutes, so it's not very long, but you'll get all of the most important areas and the best tips and strategies for how to implement them. Because I know that going through recovery is hard. There's always an area for each person that is a little bit difficult to execute on. And so the goal, or maybe a lot difficult. So the goal of this challenge is to help you have the awareness, the self-awareness, and the tools and strategies you need to overcome each of the different issues that AHA recovery faces for us. So get on it. It's great if you're at the very beginning of recovery or if you're halfway through. I mean, we never know how far through we are until it's over, do we? But no matter where you're at, it can be a really good opportunity to check in and look for blind spots and areas where you might be dropping the ball in your nutrition, in your lifestyle, in, you know, maybe it's your support network that's a problem. Maybe exercise is something that you are still struggling with making changes to. So check it out. Go to thehasociety.com/7-day-challenge, or the link will be on the website. So it may be in the show notes of this show. It may not be. Just go to thehasociety.com and you'll find it in the footer, or you'll find it in the pop-up that happens when you visit the page. And we will see you for day one of the challenge.
Okay, guys, welcome back to the Hypothalamic Amenorrhea Podcast. I am with my client, Kate. Guys, let me just tell you, you are in for a treat. You know, there are some sessions, and not saying that we don't talk about heavy stuff, we do. But, you know, laughter is medicine. Laughter is medicine. And I can't tell you how many times I have been crying so hard from laughing from the things that fly out of her mouth, that if you just need some encouragement and joy today, then like you're going to need to save this podcast and then like put it on repeat. But I'm going to hand it over to Kate. Kate, do you remember how we met?
I absolutely do. Oh my goodness, this is how we're starting the podcast. I had prepared for this to be like a real kind of formal intro.
Oh, no. We are introing you like this.
Okay, so Ashley and I first met on a cold winter January night as I had actually just got a period. And I took our first coaching call from the comfort of my own bed in a onesie with a hot water bottle strapped to my abdomen. And that, I feel, just perfectly mapped out the next 4 months for us and our relationship. Is that how you remember it?
Yes, that's exactly how I remember it. It's so interesting because around that time, we were starting to just experiment with our messaging, and all these like social media coaches are always like, once you change your messaging, you'll attract your ideal clients. You'll attract your dream clients. And I'm always like, yes, I want more of that. But you were our first next client after we switched our messaging, and I was like, oh my gosh, did this just work? Because I remember getting off the call and I took a picture of you and I sent it to the girls. I sent it to the girls and I was like, this is our like dream client from our messaging. Not saying that we haven't had dream clients, but like we didn't always have like the people who were like, I'm at a stage. And when I mean dream clients, it doesn't mean that you're not difficult. Look here, I would not have been my own dream client. Okay. I was a psycho, but moving forward, but more of like a dream client of somebody who's like, I am ready to move through this and I just need your help. Right. And so I remember taking a picture and being like, oh my gosh, I think it worked. Anyways. And so that's how Kate and I first met. And I was like, this is love at first sight. Anyways, so
we start the beautiful relationship.
Absolutely. So your situation, I think, is actually really kind of like unique. So you came to us actually already having a period. Tell me kind of about that. And you can even go into your backstory of how you developed HA. Absolutely. Wherever like you want to pick it up. But I do think it's important to point out that she came to us having a period, and yet she was still like, I need help. So kind of tell me about that.
Sure. Yeah. So in and around that time, I'm actually going to go way back to the beginning because my story is really quite long. And I think for any women out there who are thinking, I haven't had a period in 5, 6 years, I don't think I'm ever going to get it back. I didn't have a period for 15 years, just, you know, over a decade, huge. And I personally believe that my journey with HA started at a really young age. From the age of 6, I was heavily into my sport. I was competing at county level in long distance running and swimming and surf life saving and dance and every possible thing. I was the kid that loved sport. And that really did kind of continue throughout my school life. And I got to the age of 16 and I remember it clear as day, being in the changing rooms after one of my PE lessons, and all of my friends are getting out these little kind of pencil cases. And I was like, oh, what's in the pencil case? What have I missed out on? And they're all pulling out like tampons. And I'm looking at them going, what is this mythical piece of stationery that you're all carrying around? I just didn't know. I just had no idea.
What kind of pen is that? Is that a new highlighter?
Does it smell like fruit, like all of these new kind of pens coming out? And I just didn't know, and I was perplexed by this whole, and they kept going to the toilet and coming back, and I remember saying to one of my best friends, Rachel, what's going on, what's the trend, what have I missed? And she was like, well, we've all got our period. And I remember just instantly switching and being like, oh yeah, me too, and walking out of the changing room and then going home and sort of, you know, really being quite scared about the fact that I was the only person in that changing room that didn't seem to be on their period. So I had a conversation with my mum about it, and she was really understanding, and she was kind of like, yeah, you know, we have, your older sister and I have kind of noticed that as well, and, you know, we'll go to the doctor. So at the age of 16, I went to the doctor, and I remember the doctor looking me up and down, analysing, and just saying something along the lines of, you're very sporty, you're probably just a late bloomer, come back in a year if you still haven't had a period. And We did. We walked away and I carried on competing and doing 3+ hours of exercise a day, never having any problems with food. I do sort of need to make that clear that my problems with eating kind of started much later. And at the age of 17, I'd started to develop kind of cystic acne, really painful, very aggressive. And we went back to the same doctor and just kind of said, still got no period. And now I've got this horrible acne that's kind of flared up and my self-esteem was just at an all-time low. And they diagnosed me with polycystic ovarian syndrome, which I think has probably happened to a lot of women listening to the podcast. And the specialist said to me, you need to cut out carbohydrates. You need to increase the amount of cardiovascular activity that you're doing. And we're going to put you on metformin, which I believe is a drug used to help with type 2 diabetes symptoms. Mm-hmm. And all I took away from that was that I am overweight and that I've got type 2 diabetes. And from there, it just spiraled. Everything just spiraled out of control. For about a year, I was eating an obscene amount of protein. And when I tell you that I was sat at my breakfast table eating steak and eggs, I am not kidding. Not one bit of carbohydrate, not one bit of fiber past my lips. It was just protein heavy because that's what I'd been told. And I think when you're young and impressionable, you listen to your doctors because you genuinely believe that what they're saying is correct. I then was in college and going through my A-levels and being the type A perfectionist that I am, as are so many women with HA, I decided that that my A-levels and my studies were going to be the absolute focus. I wasn't agreeing with the contraceptive pill that my doctor had put me on, so I took a break from that. And I actually took 2 months off of exercise because I was so focused on my studies. And after that 2 months, I got my first ever natural period at the age of 18. And I'm sure that so many women are listening to this thinking, that's so late. And it is. It was really, really late. And with that being said, I then had a healthy natural cycle for about a year until I decided to go to university. And when I went to university, in and around that time, I had also started seeing a guy. And that relationship was really toxic. I don't know if there's many women that are going to be able to relate to this, but I never felt secure or beautiful or just appreciated in any way. And I think that my control mechanism was to try to appease him. And actually, I distinctly remember you saying in one of our meetings that it was called the male gaze. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what I was trying to accomplish. I don't know if I can sort of take a moment to say that, if you want to do that.
Yeah. So Mishi actually talks about this a lot. It's so interesting. And so it's something that Mishi talks about it. I realized, oh my gosh. And so the male gaze, which I found really interesting, is that it's not even that you want to hook up with all these people. It's not even that you want to be pursued by all these people, but it's whenever you walk into a room, you want to be able to all the attention that whenever you walk in the room that people notice you. And I think that this is such a fascinating thing because I think that we've been taught as women that we hold power if we're only able to turn the heads of powerful men. Right. I mean, I'm sure I sound like an ultra feminist, and if anyone that knows me, I'm not really, but I firmly believe, you know what I mean? That we've been taught, think about Disney films, right? Like the princess walks in and the whole room stops and stares and gawks at her beauty, right? It's the male gaze. It's I don't want your husband, but I do want his attention, I'm not even interested in him, but I want him to notice me. And I think even the male gaze even applies to it doesn't even have to be male. Maybe it's the human gaze. You even want females to notice you, right? And so it's I am valuable, or I am valuable to somebody if I can command the male gaze in a room, or if I'm walking, right? I think it's this subconscious belief that we're supposed to lead with our body, and that your beauty is what is captivating, right? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And, yeah. And that could lead you to do some wild things.
Oh, and that it did. Yeah, you've just summed it up beautifully. And that's what I was looking for in a relationship, because I never really felt that I had it. And that continued throughout my entire time in university. And I just became fixated on being what I thought was his idea of perfect. Mm. And in and amongst all of that, I completely lost myself, and under-eating and over-exercising and ultimately losing a ton of weight was the only way that I felt I was going to get that. And of course, that relationship ended, and my distorted habits at the time just increased tenfold. Can I mention numbers on the podcast?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So at my lowest, I'm 5'5". So sort of a, you know, a standard height for a woman, but at my lowest, I was 105 pounds. So tiny, so poorly, and just scared. I was just a scared little shell of a person walking around, or running, because that's what my fixation was. And just running everywhere, just in my
running
room.
Here, running floor, there. Running.
Literally, only eating rice. And yeah, it, like I said, it just got out of control. And at the age of 23, I decided that I was going to use competition as kind of an excuse for being as lean as I was. And I made the decision to run a local half marathon, which I won and did in a time of 1 hour 30. And that then gave me kind of a taster of what a full marathon would be like. And then my focus became training for London Marathon, which I did in 2014. And if I think about how I was as a person at the time, my entire headspace, every single thought that I had surrounded when I was going to get to exercise and what I was going to eat next. I did not have the brain space for anyone or anything. It was just running or the gym or what dry delight I was going to pull out of my Tupperware box, which I was carrying around with me obsessively.
Yeah, like a walking cooler. Like, yeah. I was a walking cooler. Like, all my friends knew that I had this like trusty white cooler that I had to upgrade it, because those like single ones were just a joke.
Yeah, you're not getting chicken breast and broccoli in that.
No, I was just like, what do you want me to do with that? You know what I mean? Yes, it's so, yes, you're not wrong, Kate. You're not wrong.
No. And, you know, I remember listening to podcasts where women have touched on that subject and just kind of nodding. You are doing that. Yep, I've been there. And I was. I did it all. Every possible stereotype surrounding HA behaviors, I've done it. I could write the book. I've done every single thing. So, yeah, I ran the marathon at 24 and, you know, generally had a really great time. Enjoyed the race. And, you know, I think this was around the time that family members and friends and just any kind of onlooker was looking at me and thinking, oh, Kate's really got quite thin. Like, is there a problem? And I think because I was doing so well in running, that kind of put anyone coming forward to bed, because they were like, well, she's running sub 7 minute miles, she must be fine. And the truth is, actually, I was eating a lot, you know, probably 3,000-4,000 calories in and around the time of the marathon, but it was just all so bland. You know, it was the typical oats, rice, chicken, salmon, not at all palatable, not enjoyable. And when we were traveling up to the marathon, I remember, and my poor family, you know, shout out to the families, because it's a huge journey for them too. And my poor family, I made them hire, I didn't physically force them, but I encouraged them to hire out this beautiful, like this Airbnb on the outskirts of London, because it had a kitchen. And there was no way that I was eating out at a restaurant the day before the race. I had to have everything just so. And I remember my family going out in London the night before the race, and they'd gone out for a dinner, and I just could not be part of it. And I sat in my room alone, scared and eating just bland food, bland carbohydrates. And I really do believe, and I think that so many women going through this believe that what you're doing is right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it's important to kind of mark at this point that those obsessive behaviors aren't a choice. Nobody chooses to sit in a hotel room in the middle of London the day before the biggest sporting event of the year on their own, eating endless amounts of oatmeal. Like, it's just not what we choose. But in our brains, we are absolutely doing the right thing by us.
Well, because that, and it's like, no, I'm like disciplined. No, I have goals. No, I just need to stay the course. This, you know, like all this will lead to a breakthrough. This will all work out for me. I just need to like endure this. It's okay that other people are different than me. You know, just like, it just goes, you know what I mean? Into this hyper,
like a fixation.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It was a bubble. I was in my own bubble. And it still kind of went on. Even then, I was just thinking, no, like, this is the life that I'm going to lead for the next 30 or 40 years or however long until my body gave up on me, which it did eventually. But I still had a good couple of years, so sort of around the age of 24, 25, where even after the marathon, you know, after running a marathon, you're supposed to take a month off of all exercise. I took 3 days. 3 days. And then I was back to it. I was like, nope, I'm not tired. I don't have muscle soreness. I don't have fatigue. I'm a superwoman. I'm going to go out. And I just carried on.
Those are for weak people.
I know. I'm not weak. Hey, women are made of something stronger. I'm going. I am running up that hill. So that carried on for about a year. And then I decided that I wanted to become a teacher. And it was kind of my ambition to become a PE teacher because I wanted to inspire children to be active and, you know, to kind of see all of the benefits of exercise. And in hindsight, that was just so hypocritical of me, given that I really was using it to try and control the aspects of my life that I just couldn't control. And that relationship broke down. He ended it, and it was just a really dark time in my life. And just when I thought it couldn't get any worse, I lost a family member who was very, very close to me. And I remember saying to my own mum, I'm going to run and I'm going to exercise because it's the only way that I can cope with what's going on. And my family stepped back and they just let me do it because they were grieving. I was grieving. It was a whole thing. So anyway, kind of jumping forward a little bit, I then met my now husband when I was 26. And for anyone who knows me and who will be listening to this podcast, they will know that Ross is he's a game changer. He is the person that you kind of stop and go, ooh, he's a keeper. And he was. He absolutely changed my life. He turned it upside down. And from the first date, I felt that I could be very open with him. And I talked to him about my struggles. And I remember saying to him, after 2 hours of knowing the guy, because we have that level of openness in our relationship.
I'm like, what is she going to say? Like this is where I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm ready for it. I'm ready for it.
I remember saying to him, you know, not even one latte through the day. And I remember saying to him, I'm a handful. Like, you might not want to get to know me because I'm just a million miles an hour. And, you know, if you want to be in a relationship with me, you're going to have to really be into your training. And like, we're going to be going to the gym every Sunday. And like, it's going to be a whole thing. And I think he was just really like, I think he was scared, but I think a part of him was also kind of intrigued.
That's a great combo. I'm scared and intrigued. Like, is this
so we're gonna go
butterflies or is this anxiety?
Who knows? We'll find out.
Is this what love feels like? Are you naturally scared when it's love? I don't know.
And it turned out that it was, you know, it's exactly what it was. But, you know, up until this point, I had been told by all of my doctors, there is no way that you'll ever be able to conceive naturally. You will never be a mum. You know, one doctor actually said to me, your body just doesn't want to have periods, which I think we could laugh about now because who says that? What medical professional says that?
how is that even like medical advice?
Yeah.
You mean like, yes, please show me one study that tells me that my body just doesn't want to have periods. Okay.
It's just not fussed by it. You know, it doesn't need to do that. That's for other women. Yours just doesn't.
Not you.
It doesn't have the time for that. No, not me. Yeah. And that was another conversation that I had to have with Ross really openly at the start of our relationship. You know, if you're serious about me and kind of where this could go, please be aware that I'm not going to be able to give you children. And bless him, you know, had always spoken very openly about being a dad. And he was like, okay, it's fine. And that's how we kind of had the first 3-4 years of our relationship. We genuinely believed that we would never become parents, that I just wouldn't be able to do that for us.
Mm-hmm.
And bless him, he stuck with me regardless and really went through kind of a roller coaster of the time over the next 4 years. And in 2019, a friend of mine came across the book, No Period Now What, which I think the majority of women with HA have probably read. Mm-hmm. And it is, you know, it's a great source of literature, and it's, you know, kind of, I feel, the first stepping stone for lots of women even considering recovery, because it is scary.
Yeah.
And I remember buying this book and sitting in the car with Ross, and we were going on like a 2-hour journey to visit my sister. And I remember reading it and just being like, Ross, this is me. Like, this woman is inside my head. She's literally writing about me. And he's kind of, you know, driving, entertaining it, like, oh, okay then. And I'm like, no, you need to listen to this chapter. And I'm just, you know, reading this 400-page book.
This is me!
And I started HA recovery, and I did what is recommended as the all-in method. You know, I packed in all exercise. I ate everything. And when I say everything, I really do mean everything. I was a bottomless pit at this point, and I definitely went through a period of extreme hunger. And I don't know if many of your clients have talked about that, Ashley. Have you had?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like refeeding syndrome. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. What, babe?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. So it's just, my experience of extreme hunger was just that I was eating as much as I possibly could, you know, cereal out of the box, peanut butter from the spoon, and I just never, ever felt full. It's kind of what I'd imagine teenage boys feel like.
Yeah.
Like coming home from school and just ransacking the cupboards. And that's how I felt for 6 weeks. I just didn't know what it felt like to be satiated after a meal.
Yeah.
And I guess for maybe like a decade, that's probably how I felt. So I decided to kind of stick with it, and having not had a natural period for 15 years, I got a period after 6 weeks.
That is
kind of choosing
wild.
I know. Six
15
weeks.
15 years.
Mm.
6 weeks.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to kind of mention at this point that, like, if I can get a period, any woman can get a period, because I feel like if you've got a spectrum of HA clients, I was at the most severe end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just training 2-3 hours a day, eating but not eating enough, and certainly not having the variety of nutrients in my diet. You know, I had it all. And hopefully that can provide some women listening with a little bit of comfort. So I got a period after 6 weeks. And then I remember reading the chapter of the book that says that you need to get 3 periods before you can kind of reintroduce exercise, which I did, you know, fair play to me. I did stick it out. And I actually have really fond memories of that time. I remember being like happy and kind of sitting down on a Sunday morning and eating pancakes with Ross and being like, oh, actually, you know, this is quite fun. I totally get why people do this.
A slow morning where you're not rushing out the door and you're just like eating your food, and you know, you don't have 12 million things to do by 8 a.m. and you haven't like worked out, fasted, and no. I remember the first time I saw Blake wake up. Mind you, like, we've been married for years, you know what I mean? But I was deep in HA. And it was the weekend, and I just thought I was so healthy because I would like wake up at 6 a.m. on my own, because I'm just like so healthy, guys. And I would wake up at 6 a.m. I'd get in my workout. I'd get in my quiet time. I'd get in my like journal devotional time and all this before 8 a.m. And then I saw my husband, like he was like walking down the hall and I just stared at him. I was just like so confused at what this creature was walking down the hall. And he was just like so relaxed and he was just like taking his time. He just took his time, like opening his eyes, rubbing his eyes, just slowly walking down. And I just remember being like, who
judging him is
that? Like, just like, what? Because my cortisol was so dysregulated that I would like my eyes would open and I would like pop out of bed. It was like someone shot me out of a cannon out of my bed. Mm. And I remember like when I got to go pee in the morning, I remember catching my shoulders were so scrunched up to my ears. Like I was like this, like peeing, and that I'd be like, what am I doing? And I'd catch myself and be like, oh, I need to like relax my shoulders. But I was like, who wakes up like that?
Mm-hmm.
Women with AJ yeah. wake up like that because they're so dysregulated.
Mm-hmm. And the husbands or the men or the partners are just so done with it. I feel like they're just so done with it. Ross used to go out for a run on a Sunday morning because I'm so healthy. And
so healthy.
I swear to God, he used to look at his stopwatch and be like, or his watch or whatever, and be like, right, it's been 45 minutes. She's going to come through the door any minute. And he would hear me come through the front door. And I am not joking, Ashley. That poor man would jump out of bed quicker than you can say breakfast because he's thinking, oh my God, if she comes home and she sees that I'm still in bed, she's going to be so angry with me. And I'd be taking my trainers off and I'm already like, oh, he's still in bed and it's 8:05. Really judging him. And the poor guy used to be like frantically opening the curtains and making the bed so it didn't look like he'd been lying in on a Sunday because
yeah, like resting. Heaven forbid he's resting. You know what I mean?
But he was scared. The poor guy was so scared about my response. And, you know, yeah. There's just so many things that we can reflect on. But I'm sort of conscious of time. And I'm sure we'll get into more of the funny stuff in a little bit.
Y'all, we have been trying to record this for like 30 minutes. So here we go. Take 580. Hey, did you know that we support people with HA, low progesterone, anovulation, short luteal phases, and all of the types of challenges that come up with infertility?
Danny and I are practitioners that have helped hundreds of women beat HA, regain fertility, and get pregnant naturally.
Mm-hmm. We are here to break the status quo of spending tens of thousands of dollars on IVF treatments for women who have issues that can absolutely be solved naturally.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. So we do this with our signature program that restores ovulation to regain healthy menstrual cycles. And if you're ready, get pregnant completely naturally.
Mm-hmm. On top of our one-on-one sessions, our fertility program even includes a styling session with Samantha Dawn, who is a body positive stylist. She's also our personal stylist.
Yes.
And an expert in helping you to dress your new and nourished body.
This is so important that we don't even need to convince you on how important this is. We want you to relearn how to nourish your body, claim your fertility, and feel confident in your clothes as your body changes. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be painful.
No, yeah, exactly right. It doesn't have to be painful. With a little bit of guidance and support, you can absolutely do this. So if getting your cycle back and if feeling good about the process, if getting pregnant naturally is something you want to do, if you don't want to spend tens of thousands of dollars on medical treatment for something that you don't have to, we have just the place for you to go. So go to thehasociety.com/coaching to learn more about who we are, what we do, and apply today.
Yeah, we looked forward to supporting you.
That was good. Do you like that one?
Yeah, okay. I do like that one. That one's way more us.
Yeah, boom, there you go.
I can't even remember where I was in my story. That's how long it is.
Sorry, no, you guys were eating pancakes. You guys were eating pancakes, and then
yeah.
Like, Oh, I can see why people do this.
But apparently it just wasn't good enough, because after that third recovery period, I was like, right, I've ticked that box. I'm done. I'm healed. And I went straight back to the gym. I went straight back to running. I lost all of the weight. I say all of the weight. I really do think that in that first time of going all in 2019, I maybe gained 5 kilos. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was as much as I thought it was. I remember at the time feeling huge, and like there was a huge shift in my body. And actually, when I look at pictures from that time, I really don't think that I look any different. And I went straight back into it. And, you know, 2020 was kind of the time that Ross and I spoke about the potential of having a family at some point. And we were very much like, we know doctors have said it, but they also said that your body didn't want to have a period.
Right.
And now you have. So maybe it's not, you know, maybe this whole polycystic ovarian syndrome is just a myth, which it turned out to be. And that you could actually get pregnant naturally. So we had kind of a year or two of not trying. So, you know, not necessarily taking the steps, but not using contraception and just kind of, I say, go with the flow. No woman with HA goes with the flow. It's a joke. I'm not doing that.
Yes. Going with the flow, meaning that I've scheduled out everything and now I'm upset when it hasn't gone exactly to plan. Yes.
Check. Definitely.
Nailed it.
Definitely.
Nailed it.
Definitely put on that list, don't stress, and then did it anyway. And that kind of brings us forward to sort of the last couple of years. And in 2022, we decided that, you know, we've been married for 4 years now. This is really what we want. It was like a maternal switch went off in my head and I was moving mountains to get there. And that took us back to the same doctor that told me that I had PCOS and that my body was never going to do it. And by some cruel trick of fate, we wound up in her office.
That is. And like, how old is she at the time? Why is she still practicing?
I know. And I think she was equally as shocked to see me walk into her office as well. I think she was a little bit like, oh, I didn't think that you would even be considering this as an option. And it just instantly did not sit well with me. I just remember being in those appointments and just kind of taking everything with a little bit of like a pinch of salt, because I truly believe that deep down, women, especially if they've been diagnosed with HA, women know what the problem is. Mm. I truly believe that, because we've read about it. We've listened to every podcast. We've scrolled tirelessly through Instagram and we've resonated and we may even have reached out. And I do believe that we know that the problem isn't always going to be solved through fertility treatments. But I kind of needed to do it in order to write it off, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So she started off on letrozole, which is just kind of a tablet that you take that is supposed to kickstart your cycle and give you a bleed. And then, you know, you do the baby dance and all the rest of it, and hopefully you'll get pregnant. And we went through 6 rounds of letrozole and I didn't even get a bleed. I got nothing. My lining was so thin and my hormones were so flatlined that it was like nothing. I didn't even get side effects. It just kind of felt like I was taking a vitamin every day. I just don't remember feeling any different. And our consultant was like, well, if that's not working, we think we'll move you on to IUI, which we then did 3 rounds of. And the first 2 rounds were just, I mean, it was a heartbreaking process. I think for women who decide to go down the fertility treatment route, I feel like if you haven't been through it, you kind of just assume that it's quite an easy ride.
Mm-hmm.
Like you just do the injections and then you go back on with your day. And that is just not the case at all. And I was doing these injections while I was at work. So I'd be keeping my hormones in the fridge, in the PE office at work. And I work with a lot of men. It's a very male heavy environment. And I remember them kind of taking them out and being like, what's this milk that you're drinking? And I'm like, no.
Don't you address me, friend.
Yeah. And you know, I had to put it in like a concealed box, do not touch. And I was doing that at work, and then, you know, working 50-hour weeks and just kind of cracking on as normal and genuinely expecting my body to respond to this treatment. And it just didn't. And each time we came away from the hospital, I remember saying to my husband, I just cannot do this anymore. This is just putting a huge amount of pressure on my mental health, my body, because that comes with some hideous side effects. Our relationship, it's just not working. And we decided to see out the third and final round. And on that round, we actually had a follicle that was developing. And I remember going into the hospital on the Monday for a scan. And our doctor was like, right, we've actually got a follicle that's growing. This is a really good sign. We'll scan you again on the Friday. And if it's grown to, I think it's about 12 millimeters, we'll give you a trigger shot. And then we can kind of move forward. And between the Monday and the Friday, that follicle disappeared. There was just nothing on the screen. And not once did the doctor say to me, how much sleep are you getting? How much exercise are you doing? What's your diet like? It just wasn't talked about. And we left and I said to Ross, I'm done. I can't do any more injections. I can't do any more pills. I can't hide anything else in anybody else's fridge. I can't go to friends' houses and at 8 o'clock at night have to disappear to go and do my injections and then come back down and pretend like I'm okay because I just wasn't okay. And it led us to you.
So I will, you know, like I do kind of want to pause real quick because I do, you know, like we were talking about this. Mishi and I had a conversation about IVF, which will probably come out before this, like the allure of IVF or fertility treatments. And I feel like nobody talks about the like, yeah, you're going to bring these hormones to work. You're going to make sure that nobody takes them. Like I've heard people talk about like just the stress of trying to get a hold of their meds. You know what I mean? Like just taking all this medication with you, leaving, coming back. And it, like, it's so interesting. And I wonder how this happened, but I wonder how in our mind, we somehow have been trained to believe that the fertility route specialist, you know, like fertility treatments route, sorry, is not like inconvenient. Because every single woman that I've ever spoken to has been like, that is not like, you know, like every single one has been like, this is highly interruptive of your schedule, of your travel. If you're sitting here wanting to schedule your life, well, IVF treatment or whatever, like that doesn't fit into it either. Like there's like no option where like you're not going to be inconvenienced into some way. Right.
No.
Like it's just so interesting. And I'm just like, how do they do that with marketing? Like, what is it that we just assume it's, you just take this on this and then, and poof, you're pregnant. You know what I mean? It's just so fascinating.
Oh, 100%. And, you know, those that were kind of closest to us at the time really saw the impact that it was having on not just me, because I think, you know, the focus is really a lot of the time on the woman, but on Ross as well. And, you know, he was incredibly supportive throughout, but there were even times when not even he could help me. And, you know, the micromanaging every single thing. And I just came to a realization that Christmas, so the month before we started working with you, we booked a ski holiday. And I remember just saying to him, I know why it's not working. And he sort of looked at me as if to say, well, if you know why it's not working, why haven't you done something about it? And that stopped me in the track because I hadn't done anything about it. I was still exercising obsessively, not eating. And I was doing all the things and expecting this treatment to work. And the truth of it is, actually, I had no lining. Mm-hmm. So you can force that egg and that sperm together, but if it's got nowhere to implant, it's just not going to work.
Yeah,
and it didn't work. I was so stressed. I was such just in a really dark place. I pushed away my family. I pushed away my friends. Ross and I became very, very isolated in that time. And I don't feel that enough couples talk about this. Like you said, it's kind of marketed as like, oh, if you can't get pregnant, just have IVF. There's no just.
Yes.
Nobody wants that to be their story. Nobody wants that to be the way that their miracle happens. And while I appreciate that for some couples, it's really beneficial and the right option for them, I solely believe that for women with HA, it's not the be all and end all.
Well, no, because, you know, like we have seen too many, like I've had too many clients. So whereas like a majority of our clients now are coming to us after failed IUI, trigger shot, IVF, to the point where it's like, I think, you know, between us over here, like we're able to see, no, we're seeing the plethora of cases where IVF doesn't work for HA.
Mm-hmm.
And then my question is like, that means that they have to know too. You mm-hmm. can't tell me that there's not some person back there secretly being like, I wonder what our success rate with HA is, and then continues to give treatments to women with HA, knowing that, or like, or have they ever shared with you, hey, you have HA, I want you to know that your success rate with this fertility treatment is this low. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that conversation's happening. And yet I, you know, a majority of our clients come to us this way that I know it's large. I know it's large.
Mm, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, it was a time in my life that I do not look back at with any fond memories. But with that being said, it was the final mm-hmm. kick up the backside that I needed, because he yes. was completely invested. It was the final kick up the backside that I needed to really approach the thing that I was the most scared of. So we finished the IUI in the March, and then the August we went to Disney World on a family holiday. And even that holiday was tough for me, because I couldn't control being infertile. I couldn't control being told that it was unsuccessful. So I'm going to go to Disney World and I'm going to be lean and I'm going to control everything. And I'm, you know, and it brought up some really disordered behaviors for me. And that was in the August. And I came back kind of with a lot of regret from that holiday, because I thought, you're probably never going to have that opportunity again. Like Disney World for 3 weeks with your family.
Mm.
And my focus really was on not gaining weight. I was like, I am not going to be that person that goes to Magic Kingdom and gains weight. It's just not happening.
It was so wild considering that you had gotten your period back. It's like in 6 weeks, like mm-hmm. 3 weeks at Magic Kingdom could have done your body so good.
Oh yeah. We could have got pregnant.
Yeah.
But we didn't, because I came back leaner than when I went. And I don't really know anybody who does that yeah. when they go to Florida. It just, you know, it just doesn't seem to. Anyway, so we came back in the August, and in the September, we'd started the new school year. And I said to Ross, right, this is the time. I'm not mucking around now. Like, I know that we've been back and forth with the HA thing, but I'm 100% committed. And from September until December, I made kind of some fundamental changes of my own. So I had quit my gym membership. I threw away my food scales and my weighing scales. And I made an effort to kind of eat more. And deleted my Fitness Pal. So they were kind of the things that I was like, right, I'm committing to this and I'm doing it. And between September and Christmas, I had 3 periods. But I do believe, knowing what I know now, I do believe that they were anovulatory. So I don't think that I was ovulating during that time.
Yeah.
And you and I had our first meeting in November. I said to you that I was going away for the Christmas holidays, so maybe like January would be a good time to start. And then I started with you. And the rest, they say, is history.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Well, that's where we pick up. And I love that you shared that, because, you know, a lot of times people can be like, oh, well, they worked with her for 3 months and this is what happened. It's like, but there's also a lot of changes that potentially, you know what I mean? Like a lot of changes and a lot of things that happen that allow those 3 months to be very successful, such as because you've had the failed fertility treatment route, you knew that you had to give this everything. Meaning that some people, they will sign up for coaching and they will hold back, because they're like, well, I can always just like you said, I can always just go and do fertility treatment. And then those clients do leave, and then they try it, and then they come back because it's not successful.
Mm-hmm.
And so
absolutely.
And so, I mean, I feel like I was the same way of where it's like, I had tried every option other than allowing myself to gain weight in order to recover, that when I finally chose to recover, I knew that there wasn't a rock that I didn't look under or turn under. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I knew I didn't fail because I couldn't find the answer. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? I just knew it. So by the time you and I started, it's so interesting because by the time you and I started, you know, like we had kind of talked about and concurred that it was likely anovulatory, and you still had some food changes to make.
Oh yeah. I had a lot of changes to make, not even just to the food, just to kind of my lifestyle in general. Do you want me to talk about the changes that we made?
Yeah. I mean, talk about the sandwiches and then like the chips, you know what I mean? I mean, you know, like we started off with a really sad sandwich, y'all. And with Kate, so like, here's the interesting thing is that, you know, like we have someone who's doing all this work. We have someone who is technically bleeding. We have somebody, and very rarely do I have to get like really nitpicky. I think one time I was like, Kate, do you even enjoy this sandwich? Like, this sandwich looks sad. Like, I feel sad looking at this. Like, I'm not saying that you have to have a pretty sandwich to recover, but what I am saying is that this sandwich is sad.
It was. My entire diet was just sad. It was just so dry and, oh yeah. You know, I remember Ross looking at one of my plates of food once and being like, who even eats that?
Yeah, Ross is really funny. He has these one-liners that like, okay, so what are some of the changes, like, as you look back that, you know, like, that like we had made together that you're just like, I would have never done that on my own. Like, I thought I was fine.
Yeah. For me, I think the main thing was kind of fats in general. I was always fine with the carbohydrates, always had kind of a heavy carb diet. And, you know, the protein was all fine, but I avoided fats like no tomorrow. I never had butter. I didn't have cream. I didn't have cheese, full fat dairy products, oils, avocado, nuts, just none of it. And I felt that that was a real game changer for me. And what you had me do, Ashley, was kind of add, because I think for me, the complexities were very much surrounding how I viewed food. I still had kind of a hierarchy of foods that were really safe for me. And then the untouchables, the ones that I would just be like, oh no, there's no way that that's going to touch my lips. And I think it was about kind of breaking down those barriers, but in a way that didn't send me flying backwards and being like, no, I'm done, I can't do this. It was just kind of like slow and steady intervention. And the eggs was like one of my earliest memories. So we added 2 whole scrambled eggs in butter to my breakfast, and then switched my morning oats, which I used to have with water, or grated courgette deep in the HA days.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
You know, like that's where, like I was saying, like with you, I did have to get really like nitpicky of like, what is in your oats? Water? Absolutely not. Yeah. We have to do whole milk, right? Like, is there even butter on that toast? I think I remember being like, bro, that's a cracker. Like, you need
a dry cracker and courgette in oats. To quote my husband, who even eats that? I did for a decade. No judgment to women that have done that or are still doing it, but it's nasty. Just don't do that. So yeah, we added butter and cheese to sandwiches. We added avocado to crackers. We did fattier cuts of meat in oils and just, you know, put some cheese on the veg, and we just upped the game. We just looked at what we had. I think, you know, a lot of women are a bit kind of almost reluctant to go into HA coaching because they're so worried that their entire life is going to get turned upside down. And I actually disagree. I think that's how I felt in January of this year. But actually, when I started working with you, it was very much like, we're just going to tweak this. We're just going to add a little bit of this. And by doing so, it just made everything a little bit more manageable for me. And food just got tastier. And I would look forward to doing that every day. You know, I would make sure that I was getting home at a decent time and preparing a meal that both of us would enjoy. And really kind of putting love into that. I did like an online cookery course. I spoke to, that was fun. The parts of my kitchen that I didn't even know that I had, and now I do. And I just kind of made like a real event out of it because I started seeing these positive changes very, very early. And I'll probably leave you to kind of talk about what my cycles looked like and how they sort of progressed because you're very good with the data.
Let me pull up your chart. So just to like recap for everybody, kind of like give like an over, just like this cap. So you're like, we had started in January. Well, no, we started November 11th. December. We started, well, I have your first.
Yeah. Okay. So we met in November. December we started messaging. Yes. January we started the coaching.
Okay. Yes. And so but thankfully like you were tracking and your first cycle was like 49 days. So first I'm going to kind of just run through her cycle length. The first one was 49 days, right? We started together and then it was 41 days, right? So that we're already shaving off 8 days. Then it was 37 days. Then it was 30 days. Then it was 34 days, right? And so that kind of gets us to where that was. So you can already just see on that parameter, her cycle length was starting to shorten, right? But then we were looking at like, okay, possibly, you know, like right before, like we really couldn't confirm, but like we did kind of confirm, okay, you know, I think that you're having like at least 7 day luteal phase. Then the next cycle, you know, our like first cycle together was 4 days, right? And so that's the luteal phase. Then it went to 9 days, right? So we immediately saw from the first time that we started working together, it was from like 4 to 9. Then we hop over to the next one and we're sitting at 9. Was that one 9-2?
Mm-hmm.
10. So then that one was 10. And then, so you're like, we can see it go from 4, 9, 10. And the one thing that was really great about you is that you're like, I know that this is going to take time. I know this is going to take time. I am not fooled that this is going to happen in a month. And because of that, you allowed your body to do some massive healing. I mean, to shorten your cycle length dramatically, then to lengthen your luteal phase dramatically from 4 to 9. And once we're at like 11, now pregnancy is possible. And so I think that's so important because a lot of us think that just because I'm ovulating, I should have the right to get pregnant. Mm-hmm. No, that's not how the body works. You still have to have an optimal luteal phase for pregnancy to even be viable. Like just, you know, and like we were talking about it, just because you want it doesn't mean that your body's in the position to do it. So just because you want to get pregnant with a 6-day luteal phase doesn't mean you're going to get pregnant. You know what I mean? And I love that you want it, but like we still have to keep moving forward. And I know for you, I think like one of the last few changes, I mean, obviously like there was a lot of changes, but like I was like with your sandwich, I remember being like, when was the last time you had chips? And if you know us, we're generally not recommending like junk food, but like, I was like, you know what kind of chips I love that if I want to get like total throwback to childhood, it's a sandwich with some Sun chips. Like, man, like I will eat some Sun chips and I love, and I'm not really like a chip person. And I think for you, it was just really bringing, you know, like the last few changes that we made, it was bringing back joy to your food.
Absolutely.
Joy.
Yes, it was.
Mm. Yeah.
It
so
was.
That kind of, go ahead.
Sorry. I think, you know, what we tend, women with HA, what we tend to do is kind of block out joy is definitely the word, but also like any understanding of what we truly want.
Yes.
I think there's a real kind of like a blurred area that you live in, that gray area when you're in HA where you're like, well, I'm telling myself that I don't like cheese, but I don't actually know if that's the case. Or I'm telling myself that I really enjoy running for 2 hours on a Sunday in January in England when it's cold and the rain is coming in sideways. I'm telling myself that I enjoy that, but I don't actually know if I do. And I think what had happened with me is that I had just lied to myself for 15 years, and those lies had become the habit. And the minute we made the food changes, that then became the habit. So having a whole banana instead of a half became a habit. Having the butter on the bread became a habit. And eventually you kind of get to a point where you're like, I can't believe that I've not done this for so long. And that's how it felt for me, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I just want to talk about where you are now in terms of like, do you feel like you're in a deeper place of like, in your own words, going with the flow? Like, you know, like, has your body proved that like, I can actually manage all this without your help?
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, it's kind of difficult to convince people that there is light at the end of the tunnel and there is a life beyond HA, but there really is. You know, it's not a myth, it does actually happen. And I think now kind of the biggest shift for me is just not being consumed by the stuff that I can't control. Mm-hmm. And waking up and just facing the day rather than trying to squeeze in a billion things and have the perfectly weighed out meals and everything else, I just let go of that perfection. And that I felt is where the deeper inner healing really started to happen. You'll just be amazed at how much brain space you have as a result of that. And, you know, like meal times are now fun in our house. Like it's actually a thing. Whereas before, I do feel that Ross was kind of coming home from work being a bit like, oh God, what is she going to make me eat? What dry air fried chicken breast and brown rice? Because whatever I ate, he ate, and bless him, he never complained, but just no. So yeah, just living freely in answer to your question, Ashley, just more space for everything. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. So I don't know how you want to end, where you want to end. Is there anything that you want to leave the people with? Because obviously I can chat with you forever. And I really truly, and honestly, like we didn't even get to the half of, like we're going to have part two. Okay, I'm going to have you back on for part two of like the things that you did in recovery that you can't believe you did. So we're going to have to speak to her. Because guys, I'm telling you, the things that she would come to me with, I am just dying laughing. So we're going to have you on for part two, definitely.
But yeah, we will do that. I think kind of on a leaving note, because, you know, my story did have its happy ending. I did get pregnant on the fourth cycle. Unfortunately, that ended in a pregnancy loss, which I'll probably talk about more in part two, because I think that sort of deserves its own kind of time. Yeah. But to, you know, the sadness aside and the grief and everything else that comes with miscarriage, to know that my body was actually in a place to conceive was just so worth every single thing that we went through in recovery. And I think the best bit of advice that I could give to women is never assume that it's going to be as bad as you think it is, because look, let's call a spade a spade. We all fear the weight gain. It's the one thing that we push against that we don't want. And unfortunately, it's kind of inevitable. It's what your body needs, but life doesn't end when it happens. And I don't feel that many people really notice it. And if they do, that's kind of their problem, not yours. And it will just kind of give you a freer life. You know, my body has changed significantly in the last year. But it did because it needed to. And by having those changes and doing the work, we were able to conceive. And that is something that I was told by medical professionals, numerous consultants, that I would never, ever get to do, that it would never happen for us. And like it does. And even if pregnancy isn't kind of the thing that you want to recover for, mm-hmm. all of the rest of the stuff just makes it worthwhile. But working with you, Ashley, and you know, kind of having that coaching support got me here, because although we know deep down that you have to eat more and you have to adjust your exercise, having somebody to educate you about basal body temperature and watching your charts and spotting ovulation, you know, they're tools for life. That's kind of, yeah, I think that's kind of how I want to end. Just jump, hire a coach, do the work, and then tell me that it wasn't worth it, because I don't think you meet a woman who says that.
Yeah. Well, I love that. We're going to have part two because Kate still has the end of her story, but we're at the top of the hour already. So, you know, Kate does have a finishing to this. And again, you guys have got to hear the insanity. Yeah, it's just so good. I just love that you have already, like, even though we're stopping here, this part of your journey, you have defied medical doctors. And your body does want to ovulate, and it is possible for you to get pregnant. And you've gotten further naturally at this point in your journey than you have been able to do with fertility treatments.
Yeah.
And I think that's really, really exciting. So, okay, everybody. So I will, right now, I'm going to send her my booking link. We're going to get part two up and running. And then we will post that. All righty, guys.
Hey there, it's me, Danny, and I want to tell you about Temp Drop as a fertility awareness method tracking option. So many of you guys know that we actually recommend the fertility awareness method both as you're going through recovery and 100% after you have gotten some cycles back and you're starting to move forward for the rest of your reproductive years. So Temp Drop itself is a wearable fertility monitor, and we love it. It's a wearable device, so you put it around your arm and you can use that instead of taking your temperature manually with a thermometer each morning. So I'm personally a big fan of the manual tracking. All of us at the HA Society are, and that's the method that we use, you know, just using a good old thermometer. We use that with our clients because it's the best way to use it as a diagnostic tool, as a practitioner. And it's also the best way to ensure if you're trying to avoid pregnancy that you don't get pregnant. However, manual temping for many reasons is just not always an option. When you're in the middle of recovery, again, we do recommend manual temping, but once you're cycling, the Temp Drop is actually a really great hack. So it gives you basically everything you need to effortlessly track your fertility status, like where you are in your monthly cycle. So you wear the Temp Drop sensor while you're sleeping for accurate basal body temperature readings without the stress of early morning wake-ups. So I personally love this because with a toddler, my wake-up times are all over the place and the occasional sleep disruptions make using an oral thermometer a lot more difficult. So Temp Drop's accompanying charting app enables you to track an array of symptoms alongside your basal body temperature. This includes tracking your cervical mucus if you've been using OPKs, and then it also gives you sleep insights too. So you can combine these fertility signs all in one place, and that will help you identify your fertile window, confirm ovulation, plan for your period, and if you're trying to get pregnant, you know, identify whether or not you are pregnant. So whether you're trying to conceive or avoiding pregnancy, or you want to chart for health reasons like HA recovery, making sure your cycle's not slipping back in the HA direction, Temp Drop makes fertility awareness accessible to all women, even if you don't have regular cycles or sleeping patterns. So track your ovulation in real time with the Temp Drop, and we are lucky enough to have a 15% off code. So if you go to their website, they're usually having a sale, but you can stack this code on top of the existing code. So just go to tempdrop.thehasociety.com and use the code AFHASociety. I think too, if you just go to tempdrop.com and use AFHASociety at the checkout, that will work too. So happy temping and good luck.
This episode is brought to you by Grassland Nutrition Beef Liver Capsules. Did you know that in terms of nutrient density, beef liver actually blows vegetables and fruits out of the water? If you're a client of mine, you have already been instructed to eat beef liver either fresh or in capsule form. I recommend it for anyone and everyone who is, of course, dealing with amenorrhea and fertility challenges out there, but I may even recommend it for just everyone in general. Get your husbands on it, get your partners on it. If you have a history of HA and add on top of that maybe a history of the pill, maybe you've been pregnant before, you know, through treatments or other Like, you've just, your body's been through anything, you know, you're absolutely 100% dealing with a nutrient deficiency of some kind. And while it's true that testing is going to be the best way to understand those exact deficiencies, eating nutrient-dense, real food is going to be one of the most important next steps that you take with or without testing. So I've been using and recommending Grassland Nutrition Beef Liver Capsules for years now. And the capsule form makes it so easy to get your liver in every day. And I appreciate the transparency of this product in particular above others. So in case you're wondering, it's completely natural. This is freeze-dried beef liver in capsules. It's organic. It's made from Australian beef. And my favorite of their products is the liver with kelp because of the iodine from the kelp, which is important for overall thyroid function, which is often low in women with underperforming hormones. So rather than eat seaweed snacks every day, I get to take this beef liver with the kelp for my iodine. So if you're recovering or working on a fertility journey right now, do not skimp the nutrient rich source of beef liver. Get 10% off your order with the HA Society and support your favorite podcast along the way. They ship to most countries, so you should be covered. Just go to grasslandnutrition.net and use HA Society, just HA Society, at the checkout for the 10% off. That's grasslandnutrition.net with the code HA Society.
Thank you so much for listening today, guys. Please subscribe to the podcast, and if you could head to iTunes specifically and leave a rating or review, that would help so much because it makes it easier for other people with HA who are Googling around to find the podcast really easily. So if you do that, you're doing a service to all of the women.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.